John Pilger, author, filmmaker, has turned the spotlight back on his homeland, Australia. His latest film is called Utopia. It's his fourth film on the political and social history of Australia's Indigenous communities. It's taken him 2 years to put together. And in it, he takes us to that region of Northern Australia known as Utopia, and contrast that with what he sees there, with how the majority of Australians live in what's, well, we all call it, the lucky country. Let's have a listen to an excerpt from the film. Mr. Pilger here, speaking to a man working in a health centre. Oh, we can't have that audio, I'm sorry. We'll go to John Pilger himself instead. John Pilger, welcome.
Good morning. I can tell you what he did. What he did say, the man working in the health centre was living in a tin shack. He was paying tax. He had an outside tap. He had no sanitation. And this was pretty typical of people living in the remote communities around Utopia.
Mm. Now, I mean, in your books and in your films, you've explored this territory repeatedly over time. Mm. What have you seen change, if anything, over that period?
Well, there has been certain changes that there's been the growth of a small, what might be called middle class in Indigenous communities, but this has had no significant effect on the conditions of the majority of Aboriginal people in remote Australia. I mean, one extraordinary moment when we were editing this film, we actually confused the footage that I'd shot 28 years ago with the footage today. Same shacks, same conditions, same diseases, same preventable diseases, all those same problems that have still to be addressed. And it was quite an experience for me, I suppose, to go back into communities that I'd known over the years and to find myself shocked all over again.
I think this is the interesting thing. I mean, in your first work here, it was a secret country. You were revealing this third world aspect of Australia, Australia's original inhabitants, many of whom live in these extraordinary conditions. I mean, these conditions are no longer secret. These conditions have been repeatedly revealed over decades. how do we explain? Well, I think that's true. I think there's a great knowledge that this exists.
Yes, I think you're correct in one sense, in that there have been fragments of them. They've appeared on the news. But, I mean, what is striking to me always to watch in Australia is how Indigenous people are, even in their most dire straits, are stereotyped. And it was interesting doing some Vox Pops on Australia Day last year, and people referenced the media for their rather ignorant and stereotypical view of Indigenous people. My experience is that there is a certain reaction, oh, we know all that, and of course, if the society knows all that, then why hasn't it fixed it? And there's one interesting interview in the film with Salil Shetty, the head of Amnesty International, standing in Utopia, and he says, I don't understand it. You know, 3% of the population. Why hasn't this been fixed over the years? And another one with Professor John Altman down in Canberra, the anthropologist, who says, you know, I think I quote him, in his darkest hours, he thinks that the only solution can come from outside Australia. Well, of course, it can't come from outside Australia. Pressure might. It has to come from within Australia.
But that's a striking moment from John Altman. I mean, a very serious and wise man at ANU. And his suggestion is that Australia needs foreign aid. I mean, okay, there's a sense of rhetoric about that. But the point he makes is that if we were to transfer the situation that we see within our own country into the places to which we do send aid, we would not question that commitment for one moment. And yet, in our own country, we ignore this plight. We turn away from it. It's inexplicable.
Well, I'm not sure it's inexplicable, but I think the other point he made, and this is the point I think you're making there, that when we go to other countries to assist them, there is quite a rigid training process of understanding of the cultural situation, of who they are, and so on. The point he made, and so many others have made to me over the years, that people are allowed, be they the military heading off an intervention or politicians dropping out of the sky or anybody else, to go to Aboriginal Australia absolutely ignorant and without any understanding and certainly without any will to consult with the people. So all the criteria that Australia applies, quite rightly, to the rest of the world, it doesn't. Is it inexplicable? You know, Henry Reynolds has just published a new book called Forgotten War, in which he describes the carnage across our past. And in my experience, that carnage hasn't been recognized. There's one sequence in the film where I go into the Australian National War Memorial. I'm not allowed to film there. I asked permission. I made the mistake of saying I wanted to film what they had on the original wars, the wars that resisted the British invasion, and I was refused. So I played tourist with a camera. There's absolutely nothing on the frontier wars that explains the frontier wars in our greatest war memorial, and yet as you enter the war memorial, and I think very few people notice this, they should look up and they'll see Aboriginal people depicted along with birds and reptiles, kangaroos and so on. I'm not saying that that is the attitude now, but it's an attitude, it's an institutional attitude that has not been rectified. And so I'm not sure it's inexplicable. I think it is explicable because until we come to terms with the past,
It's that coming to terms with the past, and that in terms. I mean, you mentioned Henry Reynolds there. I mean, the telling of Australian history has been a vexed thing and a controversial thing. There are still prominent commentators in this country who deny entirely the existence of any phenomenon around the stolen generations.
One of these prominent commentators is the Minister for Education, Mr. Pyne, who popped up the other day and said that. Yes, we didn't treat the Aboriginal people too well, but we should really rather more concentrate on the benefits of Western civilization. I don't think anyone's in any doubt when they land in Sydney the benefits of Western civilization. But go out to the communities where I've filmed, and they'll have another view of the benefits of Western civilization.
And yet, at the top of that government, we have the Prime Minister, a man with significant personal interest in this as an area of policy and difficulty, and with significant contact into communities. So it's someone with a deeper sense of that understanding that you spoke about before.
Well, a deeper sense. Deeper sense is rather elusive to a lot of people who look at it. I remember when Professor James Anaya, the UN special reporter, came to Australia following the intervention, went out there and described the really disgraceful effect of that intervention on communities as racist and the stigmatizing of people and so on. Mr. Abbott, who was then the Shadow Minister for Indigenous Health, told Professor Anaya to get a life and to stop listening to the victim brigade. I mean, even his so-called famous volunteering, we now learn from leaked documents, has been paid for. His flights up to Cape York has been paid for by Cape York. You know, he's just cut the Aboriginal legal services. I think we've got to really demythologize so much about the Indigenous political world in Australia, and the idea that Abbott is some friend of Indigenous people is one of those myths.
And a treaty, you argue in your film, it would be fundamental to the sorts of shifts that would be needed to make real adjustments to this situation?
Well, I'm only echoing on a treaty. It shows how much regression there has been. You asked the beginning of this discussion about change. The real regression is in the political discussion of solutions. And, you know, 20-odd, 30 years ago, the discussion about a treaty was vibrant. And I'm only echoing at the end of the film when I say that until we have a treaty like New Zealand, like the United States, like Canada, like every other Western country with indigenous people, in which we sit down as across a table as equals and talk about the past and construct a real way of going forward in the future, a treaty between peoples. And until that happens, we'll all be, as you've done, scratching your head, saying it's inexplicable, we'll all be prisoners of the past. And the Aboriginal people will be more than prisoners of the past. They will remain victims of the past. And I think that sense of a treaty is so growing in Aboriginal communities again. I was with a group of senior Aboriginal people the other night, and the discussion was about a treaty.
Mm.
So I think if that transfers, as it seems to be doing, to young Aboriginal people who, like young people everywhere, are not going to take this nonsense, I think we'll hear much more of a treaty. But will we listen? That's the question. Will we listen?
John Pilger, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Filmmaker, writer John Pilger. Now, his latest film, Utopia, the film that we're talking about, will be showing at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Sydney from next Tuesday until Australia Day, and will then be screened at various venues around the country after that. It's 18 minutes after 8.